Welcome to Stacks and Stories, the podcast of the Mississippi Library Commission. Today's episode is another Shelf Absorbed, where Shelley and Tracy dive deep into an aspect of literature they both love. Today, they're talking about short stories. Join Shelley and Tracy as they talk about short stories from their childhood, as well as some more recent reads, all the while exploring the ins and outs of this unique literary form. Stay tuned.
Hello, welcome everyone to Stacks and Stories, the podcast of the Mississippi Library Commission. We're going to do a special episode today of Shelf Absorbed. That's the podcast where Tracy Carr and myself, Shelley Ziegler, we get together and we talk about things that are interesting to us. I don't know, it's kind of like our little...
It's our little thing.
It's our little special thing.
We are special in that we decided that when we talk to each other, it needed its own cool name.
Yeah, because of our special banter.
Yeah.
So today our theme is going to be about short stories.
It's stacks and short stories.
Stacks and short stories. I like that. Short stories, Tracy, I think people either love them or they don't. What do you think?
I think that is accurate, but I think it is a faulty notion that people think that short stories are a certain kind of thing. For I don't know, a lot of people, most people, the last time they read a short story, it was in high school English.
Agreed.
Or something. Yes. You know, like that. You know, listen, I love a novel. I love a novel.
I love a novel.
I like a big chonky novel.
I don't love a chonky, but I love a regular novel.
I like the backstory of everyone this person ever interacted with, but the short story is such a nice form, and people should, especially in our high-paced lifestyle.
Yes,
you know what? You can get in, you get out,
and
you feel like you read something, and then you can move on with life. So I love a short story.
I don't know if you remember this, but maybe it was like 6 months ago. I was going through one of my... many phases that I go through. I was going through a phase where, yeah, I was having trouble focusing on reading and
a slump.
You know, in my high-paced life that
right.
I have, and I wanted. So I started reading a short story collection. I actually cannot remember what it was right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you said to me, a short story collection is good because you can read it and you enjoy it, and then you're done with the story, and then you put it aside. It's mm-hmm. not something that you have to dwell on, and
it's over
in one sitting, and oftentimes depending on the story it can be a couple pages. And that was a really good point.
It's a little jump start back into
reading. It's a good jump start. So that could be one vehicle mm-hmm. for the short story. I didn't think I liked short stories. I was kind of like that person that mm-hmm. was like, oh, I think that's a high school assignment.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remembered that when I was younger, like a teenager, I did really like to read Stephen King books.
Mm.
And Stephen King is notorious for publishing a lot of short story collections. His short stories, I think, tend to lean on the long... some of them tend to lean on the longer side of short mm-hmm. stories. So one of my picks today is actually a Stephen King book that I read when I was younger that I still really love.
Yeah. Does it have the body in it?
I do not think it does. No.
Okay.
No.
I haven't read the body, but I love Stand By Me. So
I did read the body, and I cannot remember which collection that is in. But I did. But it is it's pretty short. I do remember that. How many times will we say short in this podcast?
You know, we should have some kind of contest.
A counter.
Except, oh yeah, we should have a counter.
Yeah.
With a little clicker.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll just go ahead. Sorry. I will just go ahead and tell you what the Stephen King collection was.
Yeah.
So it is called Night Shift. And so I have two older brothers. And so they were also readers. So they were really into Stephen King. And that's how I got into Stephen King, because mm-hmm. they had them lying around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I probably shouldn't have been reading Stephen King, but I did.
Proximity is a big factor.
Yes.
In
proximity.
It
was there.
Books and friendship, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing Night Shift. This copy, and this is back like in the 80s, because I think Night Shift came out in like 1980. I could be wrong. But so I read it in like mid 80s. There's probably like 15 or so stories in it.
Mm-hmm.
But one, can I talk about like one of the stories
yeah,
that's in it?
Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. So it's called The Man Who Loved Flowers. And so it's about this man, and he's like really excited and has this really happy look on his face. And he goes into this flower shop, and everyone is just like entranced by him because of the way he looks. And so he keeps talking about Norma. Like, oh, he's going to buy these flowers for Norma, and he loves Norma. And so he buys these flowers, and then it's all drawn out a little bit, so mm-hmm. I'm just making it short. I know. So this guy comes out of the flower shop, and he's all jaunty and happy, and then he sees this woman. He's like, Norma, Norma, and he runs up to her, and she looks at him, and she says, I'm not Norma. And he takes out a hammer and he bludgeons her to death.
What?
And then it turns out he's a serial killer, and he's been doing this for like 10 years. And he actually has killed Norma a long time ago. But he still in his head believes that she's alive, and he buys flowers all the time because he's on the hunt for Norma.
And you read that when you were like 12?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I read it when I was 12 or 13. And that was a big book. That was not a short story. So anyway, I just really remember the man who loved flowers
and bludgeoning women with a hammer.
He loved Norma, loved her to death.
Wow.
I know. So that's probably not a collection to what you're going to talk about.
No, it's not. Yeah. And I don't think that would be in the YA collection today. You know, but there wasn't YA when we were of YA age. There was like picture books, and then kind of anything juvenile was just kind of lumped together.
Yeah. I don't think... my brothers got things from the YA collection. I think they were just reading what they wanted. But
yeah, and that's what
our parents did. They let us read what we wanted.
Absolutely.
Which was great.
I always say this, and it sounds mean, but I'm like, oh, I'm glad my parents didn't pay any attention to what I was reading and watching on TV.
Yeah.
Well, you are correct that none of my books have... You know what? There might be murder in them.
Okay.
But they are not Stephen King.
Okay.
There's no hammers.
Well, I'm glad we're not going to overlap.
No, I don't think we will.
Okay.
But I will start with a story that does have a little bit of violence in it.
Oh.
Just as a...
Okay. I'm excited.
As a segue.
Do tell.
When I started thinking of like what are my favorite short stories... Which ones do I go back and actually read? Because while I'm not a huge rereader of like an entire novel, I do like to reread a short story. You know why? Because it takes 15 minutes
That's
of your
right.
life, and then you're done.
That's right.
And you can dip in,
uh-huh.
visit your old friends, and yeah. dip out.
That's right.
So one of my favorites is called Parker's Back, and it's by Flannery O'Connor. In this, you know, she is Gothic Southern storyteller. She was Catholic, and religion always plays some kind of role, not in every story, but good and evil and where religion kind of intersects in that, but also just like the intense weirdness of humans. You know, anyway, so in the story, Parker's back. This guy named Parker has his wife who doesn't like him much. And she is, you know what? I know you love it when I read
I do
from
love
a story.
It, actually. And I was excited to see that you brought some books.
Yes, so, I did. So we're, I'm not going to read a long thing, but I'm going to read the first paragraph of this story. Parker's wife was sitting on the front porch floor snapping beans. Parker was sitting on the step some distance away watching her sullenly. She was plain. The skin on her face was thin and drawn, as tight as the skin on an onion, and her eyes were gray and sharp like the points of two ice picks. Parker understood why he had married her. He couldn't have got her any other way, but he couldn't understand why he stayed with her now. She was pregnant, and pregnant women were not his favorite kind. Nevertheless, he stayed as if she had him conjured. He was puzzled and ashamed of himself. Okay, are you in?
I am.
Yeah.
I am, because why? Like, I want to know more.
Yeah.
I want to know more.
Well, his wife, Sarah Ruth, is very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And he is not. He can't figure her out, and he can't figure out why they're even together. He's always trying to get a rise out of her just to kind of see, like, what's happening with this person. So he does work for this, like, old crusty woman, and he's like, yes, this beautiful blonde, young blonde I'm working for, just to see what she, like, is she going to be jealous?
Yeah.
And he realizes, like, you know what? She wouldn't be jealous. She would be concerned with the sin part of it, you know, not like her feelings, but just because it's wrong.
Yeah.
So anyway, but he's also covered in tattoos. He is just absolutely covered in tattoos, except his back does not have any tattoos on it. He has this moment. He's riding around this tractor doing work for the crusty woman that he pretends is mm-hmm. a beautiful blonde. And he's on this tractor, and he hits a tree, and he goes flying off of it, and the tractor bursts into flame, and his shoes are on fire, and then the tree's on fire, and he has this like kind of religious moment where he's like, oh my gosh, I gotta do something. And so what he does is I don't know how he gets to the city. I guess he gets in his car. I was thinking his car is the one that exploded, but it was the tractor. Anyway, he zips to the city, and he just like runs into the tattoo parlor, and he's like, let me see the book of religious stuff. I want a tattoo of God. So they're like, okay, here's all the things. And so he finds one, and it's mm-hmm. this classic God, you know, Christ figure.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes 2 days. He gets it emblazoned on his back.
I knew he got it on his back.
Yeah. And it covers his entire back.
Yeah.
And when he looks at it in the mirror, he's, as the kids would say, he's shook. It is a lot. So he goes back home to Sarah Ruth, because now he's been gone for several days, because this is not a one-day tattoo. It took like 2 full days. And Sarah Ruth won't open the door, and she's like, who is it? And he was like, it's me. His name is, he goes by O.E., but his name is actually Obadiah Elihu.
Wow, that's quite a name.
It is. It's fun to say, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she finally lets him in, and he starts taking off his shirt. And she's like, you're not getting any bit of me this morning, or something like that. You ain't going to have none of me this near morning, she said. Anyway, but he shows her the tattoo. And look, she is absolutely not impressed. So what she does,
she might be.
She takes her broom handle and she starts beating him on the back, screaming, idolatry, idolatry. But what happens is it is basically like a crucifixion, because the figure becomes all lumpy and swollen and bruised.
Because he just got it.
Well, no, she just beat on him with a broom handle.
Oh, because she beat on him. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the end.
Well, that's really good.
He did this. He was like, this is the only thing I know to do. I will get a tattoo. And it's the wrong thing for Obadiah Elihu.
Let me ask you this about short stories. Okay. And this one is a good representation of what I'm going to ask. So that one kind of ends abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people might have trouble with the fact that a short story is in itself not a complete story. Yes. I mean, it is a short story.
I mean, yeah, you could have all the backstory
do you like short stories that maybe don't explain everything that is going on, like, and maybe end on and in a situation where you have to fill in the gaps yourself?
Yes. Well, in this one, so she, you know, he runs off, and the very last line is she's looking out the window, and there he is leaning against the tree, crying like a baby. So, yes, I can see where if you're like, but why? What happened next? Did they stay together? Did he stay around because she's pregnant? Like, how did they? Mm-hmm. It does go into how they met, but what happened after that? Like, what about that old lady with her tractor all burned up? Like, what happened with her? If it was a novel, we'd return to that. But this is all we get. It's all Flannery O'Connor wanted us to know. So we don't need to know anything else. And honestly, I like a story that leaves me going, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I think my opinion is that when you're reading a short story, you have to go into it with a different mindset than you would a novel.
Yes. In a novel, you're going to find out all the things mm-hmm. that you need to find out.
Yeah.
And in a short story, you might not get everything, but it should anyway have what you need, but not like anything extra.
No. But I think that is something that some readers might struggle with. Just something I'm thinking
about.
Well,
I also think that, you know, when you are reading a novel, those people become people you know, those characters. And so why do I want to make a commitment to someone I'm only going to know for 5 pages?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But in those 5 pages, what if it's someone like Obadiah Elihu? And you're saying that name.
You're right.
And you never forget him.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that story.
It's a good one.
You know, I've never read her before. Flannery O'Connor. I never thought I'd like her, but I like what you read.
You could try it. I have it right here.
I kind of have been intimidated by her.
Okay.
Quite honestly.
There's, we can chat. I have some recommendations.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
She always seemed kind of too literary for me.
Oh,
I
no.
Guess.
Yeah. No, yeah. I can see that perception, but I will tell you this. There's in some version of some, you know, like Norton anthology or something that I was teaching out of one time, there was a, I believe it was her, someone had written her a letter that was like, hey, what does it mean when this person does this at the end of the story? And she did not like that. She did not like that. There was a classroom where someone was saying, this is exactly what happens in this story. This is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
So she very much wanted you to take whatever you want to take from it.
Oh, well, I like that.
So what is next on your list?
Well, you might remember the Ken Burns documentary about Ernest Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
What was that, like 2 years ago, maybe?
I think we had a forced book club.
We did. I really enjoyed it, remember?
Yeah.
And
A Movable Feast is,
yes,
is
Movable
a great,
Feast
a great
was
little book.
Really good. And that sort of opened me up to reading more Hemingway because I had originally only read The Old Man and the Sea, and that has scarred me for life in a bad way.
Right.
Very short book, mm-hmm. not a short story, but hated that book. And it could have been because I was forced to read it. But I did, when we had that book club, and also when I watched that documentary about Hemingway, I became very interested in reading more mm-hmm. of his work. So I purchased, which I hardly ever purchase books because I'm just...
You're a librarian.
I'm a librarian. I don't like to purchase. But I had read a couple of his short stories like online mm-hmm. that were available online. And I really liked them. So I was like, I'm going to buy. And anyway, so I bought the Hemingway stories. And it was like sold like in like conjunction with the PBS documentary. Yeah. And so I don't know. So I really like that. And I turn to it, not like every day, but quite a bit. Ernest Hemingway, he gets a bad rap from a lot of people, and maybe justifiably so. He was very much a man's man mm-hmm. type thing. I guess man's man, is that the mm-hmm. right phrase? You know, he has a lot of... macho machismo right. thing going yes. on. That doesn't bother me, but yeah. I know it does bother a lot of readers.
And he was of a different time.
He was. And I guess I look past that. Mm-hmm. So, but his writing is so amazing that it doesn't bother me. So there is this one short story, and it's called Up in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of debate about this story, but I really like it. So the story is, there's this blacksmith that comes to this town, and there's this young girl that, I think she's young. She's a young woman. And she really has this thing for this blacksmith. And this blacksmith, there's a hunting trip because it's Hemingway.
Right. We got to shoot something.
Yeah, he's got, you have to kill. But anyway.
Must
so
kill.
Later on after the hunting trip, so Jim is the blacksmith. Jim is in the kitchen, and the young girl, I can't remember how the young girl, how she ends up being in the same proximity as him, but anyway. Anyway, and then afterwards, after dinner, they go for a walk. And this is a part that people get uncomfortable about, and there is debate. So there is a scene where some say the man assaults the young woman. Some read into it that he seduces her. When I read it, you know, I really wasn't sure. I just read it without reading anything about I just read the short story. And then I like to go on Goodreads a lot after I read things. Mm-hmm. And then I read, there is some controversy about this particular short story. So then I went back and read it again, short story, because they're short stories, you know, like you were saying, you can jump right in, mm-hmm. you know, it's a few pages and you can just jump right out. And where I'm going with this is that I like short stories because you don't have to invest a lot of your time. So that is an example of where I heard something else. I heard other discussion about this story. I was like, that's an interesting point of view. I'm not sure that that's the way I read it. Let me go back.
So what happened after you reread it?
Well,
did you decide which way that situation went?
No, not really. I was still on the fence. Hmm. And I still liked him anyway.
And you know what? That
so, like, I still did not form, like, an opinion either way. I could see it both ways.
I think that is what he probably intended. That's not the only story where something happens that is not explicitly mm-hmm. described.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably he's probably wherever he is. He's like he's enjoying this conversation.
He wanted that debate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, because afterwards, the girl puts her coat over the man because he passes out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because he's been drinking or whatnot, but he passes out, and so she puts her coat over him and then walks away. So you know that can be taken in a million different ways.
And I mean, that is kind of a tender thing to
do. It is, but again, I'm not here to say I'm not Ernest Hemingway.
What?
I know, shocker. But anyway, I do like reading Ernest Hemingway, and I never thought I would. And I think the short stories allow me to
kind of
dive
it
into his little world, read a few pages, read some crazy stuff, and be like, I'm not sure how I think about that.
You know, The Sun Also Rises is much more readable than The Old Man and the Sea, and it basically all happened, and it irritated all of his friends because he just changed their names. Not even like, it would be like, oh, this is my friend Melly instead of Shelley. It's like, you know, change one letter.
I have heard that about that book, and I still haven't read it, because I think I remember you telling me that, and I always had it on my radar to read, and I still haven't yet, but now I'm going to write it down to read again, and maybe I will this time.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
I'm going to segue from your classic male American author. Mm-hmm. So my segue is to Tennessee Williams.
All right. So,
yeah, they're so alike.
Yeah.
In every way.
A little bit.
So this collection is called One Arm. And this is the one that, yes, I am a thief, and I did steal this from the public library. Not this version. This is the one from upstairs.
You mean back in the day?
Back in the day in Sari Nicholson Memorial Library System of Garland, Texas, I did swipe a copy of this. However, I still have it. I will always have it. The end. But what is more important than me stealing it is the contents. So there are two stories in this collection that are standouts to me. One is called The Field of Blue Children, and it's about this girl who is about to graduate from college, and she has a boyfriend, and she's completely like what you think of as like a, you know, normal all-American girl. And there's this boy in her class, I guess it's a poetry class, and he's kind of geeky, and he writes this like really weird poetry, like
writing it to her?
No.
Or he was just writing it?
But she knows he's in love with her, just because like of the way he looks at her or whatever. There's this embarrassing thing that happens after he reads a poem. No one says anything, because they're weird. And anyway, after he reads his poems this one time, she runs up to him afterward, and she's like, this is the most amazing poetry I've ever heard. It's unlike anything I've ever read. And he gives her a big wad of poems to read. So she reads them, and after she reads them, she can't go to sleep, and just something overtakes her, and she goes to his house. This is a small college town or whatever. She goes to wherever he lives. She was like, oh my gosh, I just read all these poems. There's one about the field of blue flowers. He was like, oh, the field of blue children. And so they go to this like beautiful field, and it's just like this intense experience for her. Like she's kind of engaged. She's like wearing her boyfriend's pin, you know, but she just feels so restless. She just feels like there's something missing from her life, or like this thing is out there, and what is it? And so they, you know, roll around in the field of blue flowers.
As you do.
And then it's over. And then she marries her boyfriend. And a few years later, she writes her husband a note that just says, you know, I'll be back in a while. And she drives back to this college town, and she goes to the field, and she weeps for an hour. And she gets back in the car, brushes off her skirt, and is like, I will never be a child again.
She is sad over her like youth, like her lost love or her lost
innocence. It's just like there was this path that could have been,
that she could have taken,
and she's not sad about the path she chose, but when you think about all of the experiences or opportunities or people you could have, you know, known better or whatever, and you know, what's his name? I think his name is Homer. Homer Stallcup is his name. So, you know, Homer represents, he's a kind of a dork.
Yeah.
And he's not who a nice girl like Myra mm-hmm. would, you know, roll around in a field with. Anyway, I love the story. I like that story. Especially if you read this when you're like 15.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You know?
That's like prime for a 15-year-old.
It really is. But the other thing that I didn't even realize was in this book is a story called Portrait of a Girl in Glass. And it is a story version of The Glass Menagerie.
No.
Yes. So this book was published in 1948, and this story was not published anywhere else before it was here, although The Field of Blue Children was published in 1939, just in case anyone noticed, anyone cares. So this book comes out in 48. The play came out in 44, so who knows which one he wrote first. I guess if I was a Tennessee Williams scholar, I could figure it out. Find a diary entry where he's like, "Dear diary, I wrote a story called..."
If you wanted to put the time in, sure.
Yeah.
I guess you could do that.
I kind of want to know, but I want someone else to have done that.
Yeah.
Done that work.
Done the work.
So it is a very close, it's very, very much like the play. And the very last speech of the play is one that, for some reason, triggers my crying.
Oh, really?
Every time, yeah.
So if you ever need a good cry, you just pull that out?
Just pull out Glass Menagerie. So this was usually not a problem, but I used to be a teacher, and I taught the Glass Menagerie. When I would get to this last little bit, I would get a little choked up. So, of course, what am I going to do? I'm going to read it to you. And then we'll compare with the end of the story. Okay, so he says, I was attempting to find in motion what was lost in space. I would have stopped, but I was pursued by something. I passed the lighted window of a shop where perfume is sold. The window is filled with pieces of colored glass, tiny transparent bottles in delicate colors like bits of shattered rainbow. Then all at once, my sister touches my shoulder. I turn around and look into her eyes. Oh, Laura, Laura, I tried to leave you behind me, but I am more faithful than I intended to be. So his sister is not actually there. He is just thinking about her, and he's running from his family and that situation. But when he sees a perfume bottle and the way the light catches it, he's mm-hmm. like, he's right back there with her. So the story is very similar. I see the faint and sorrowful radiance of the glass, hundreds of little transparent pieces of it in very delicate colors. I hold my breath, for if my sister's face appears among them, the night is hers. I gotta say, I think he wrote it first, because the play version is so much better.
Yeah, it is.
Like, the it's speaking directly to her, like,
yeah.
I am more faithful than I intended to be. That is a line that, you know, that just kind of gets me. But anyway, those are my Tennessee Williams stories.
Good stuff. I wrote them down.
Yeah. Well, listen, you can check out these books today.
Okay.
You don't have to, but they're here if you want them.
I might check out one of them today.
Okay. Yeah.
One of them. Well, my last book I wanted to talk about, and then I also have some books that I'm looking forward to reading, is one that you know very well. And I have read for the second time, is called The Secret Lives of Church Ladies.
Yes.
By Deesha Filial. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that correctly?
Filial.
Filial. She was at the Mississippi Book Festival in 2021?
Yeah.
I was thinking.
It was just last year.
Oh, okay.
There wasn't an in-person festival in 21.
Okay.
So
that was the COVID pandemic thing. And you got to interview her on a panel.
Yes.
Okay, so this book, I read it when it came out, and then I've read it again for a book club that I'm in. But it is a collection of stories about black women that have grown up in their church, and
it's about a lot of the double standards that they've had from the church, and in finding themselves as a person. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sexuality that's explored. It's a very short book with short stories.
It's a great combo.
It is. It is a great combo. What I found interesting in myself is that when I read it the first time, I read on my Goodreads account that my favorite story was the peach cobbler story.
Yes, it's kind of the one that people, yeah. You know.
But when I read the second time, it was not my favorite story. So it really does, you know, depending on what's going on in your life, it really does change how you mm-hmm. approach a book. So while I did enjoy Peach Cobbler the second time around, it was not the standout to me. The standout to me was the Dear Sister story.
Remind me of what
happens. Okay, the Dear Sister one is about there's a woman, she's writing, it's in the letter format, and she's basically explaining what all her sisters are all basically half-sisters.
Oh, yes.
Because they have that
yes.
father who's right. kind of a doo-doo. And I don't know.
I think that word is okay for this podcast.
Right.
He's not great.
He's
not a nice man.
He has fathered a lot of children.
Yes.
And, but they all share the same father. And so they have discovered that they might have another sister out there. Mm-hmm. So she's writing this letter to this potential sister. And I love the way the letter's written, because in the letter, you find out like what the family is all about, like which sister does this, and all about their personalities. And I don't know, I really gravitated towards it. I just really loved it. And one of the things going on is that the grandmother, she if she dreams about fish,
yes,
that means
someone's pregnant.
Yep. And so throughout the story, she's like, I just know one of you girls are pregnant. And so it comes up a couple times, and I love the way it ends, because the sister writing the story says, so are you pregnant? It's just, I don't know, I just thought it was really well written, and I love that it was written in a letter format.
Oh, you know what?
More people
need to do that.
I know. I loved everything about it. So I just think it's interesting when I read something for a second time, and I feel differently about mm-hmm. the material.
Yeah.
Even though it's only been a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt really, you know, I...
And that makes more sense, it being a story collection. Because while they all kind of seem to maybe exist in the same universe, mm-hmm. it is different characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my other one. I really enjoy that book.
Well, I did as well. When it first came out, it was like the thing that, mm-hmm. And for a book of short stories to get all kinds of press and attention
is, it really has.
It was, I believe it was her debut. I could be making that up.
I am sorry
if that is incorrect.
I actually do not know, but I know it's been nominated for many awards and it's won several, but I do not
and
know.
It's being or it was being made maybe it, they have continued it, to an HBO
yeah
show.
Yeah, it was supposed to be greenlit, is that mm-hmm. is that the terminology
mm-hmm.
for like an HBO
yeah.
miniseries, and I really hope they do.
And well, during at the book festival when I asked about it, it was during the writer's strike.
So maybe
they have picked it back up, maybe
yeah.
it'll
yeah.
turn
who
out.
Knows it can go either way.
I'm just gonna quickly talk about the OG, my favorite person, Ellen Gilchrist, who, you know, she can do it all. She can write a poem. She can write a short story. She can write a novel.
She can write
a book of essays.
She can.
And the Victory Over Japan it's not the one that won the National Book Award, but this is the first collection. This is the first anything that I read by her. And this collection has all of the main characters. So she doesn't always repeat the characters, but there are some that pop up over the years. And when you when you start a new collection of hers or you read a new story you haven't read and you're like, oh, it's these people again. I know them. And so this collection has books about Rhoda, who is like the you know, stand-in basically for Ellen Gilchrist. It has stories about the rich New Orleans crowd, mm-hmm. Which those people are in the stories. There's Nora Jane, who again, I read this. I remember the moment I pulled it off the shelf at the library.
Really?
Again, Nicholson Memorial Library.
Oh, that Nicholson Memorial.
They did a great job.
What a great collection
it
they
really
had.
Was. It really was. Anyway, Nora Jane was the one that I just absolutely, I mean, I loved Rhoda, but Nora Jane was the one that I really loved. And I named my car Nora Jane.
I did not know
You know
that.
What? You got to name your car or something. Anyway, but she just has this really specific voice that she writes in, mm-hmm. And it's very straightforward, and Rhoda sounds like a hoot. She actually sounds like someone I would not want to be friends with, but I want to know everything about her.
Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean?
I do know those kinds of ladies.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll sit over here while you mm-hmm. do your thing, Rhoda. So I'm not going to read anything major. I just want to read like two lines. So this story, the title story, Victory Over Japan, Rhoda is in third grade and this little boy has been bitten by a squirrel and he has to get rabies shots in his stomach every day for 2 weeks and they come to school to do
it.
Oh
my gosh.
It's terrible. So she's talking with her friend Letitia. Why don't they put him to sleep first? Letitia said. I'd make them put me to sleep. They can't, I said. They can't put you to sleep unless they operate. My father could, she said. He owns the hospital. He could put me to sleep. She was always saying things like that, but I let her be my best friend anyway. Anyway, it's just little, you know.
I do like that.
Anyway, she's the one, but her first collection, In the Land of Dreamy Dreams, mm-hmm. Came out in 1981, and that one won the National Book Award. So if you are a person who likes doing things sequentially, you should start there. And then her next book after that was The Annunciation, which was her first novel, which is my favorite.
Okay. I've written down several things you've talked about.
Ah.
So goals to read. Well, I have had a few books on my shelf at home that I have not read yet, but I want to give them some shout outs today. These Precious Days by Ann Patchett.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read that?
I have not.
Well, I
think it's the word precious that makes
I
me
don't.
Like kind of.
You know what? I don't like that word precious, and I also don't like the cover.
What's the cover
well,
look like?
Well, it has a cat on it, and that's not the problem.
You're such
it's
a
just
dog
that,
person.
No, I don't.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not anti-cat. I'm anti-precious with the cat.
Yeah, it does give a vibe.
I don't like the vibes, but I know I will like it. I just...
Is that not a dog? I just Googled it.
Oh, is it.
It
a dog? Anyway,
oh, my gosh.
I thought it was a cat. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all the color scheme. I don't like, you know,
it's a dog.
You know what? I thought it was a cat because it's kind of...
It's just floofy.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like the floofy dog.
It doesn't necessarily tell you anything about
no.
what it's going to be about.
You know what that cover looks like to me? It looks like a Vanity Press cover.
Mm.
And I'm not being ugly towards Vanity Press. I'm just saying it's hard for me to evoke desire to read it. But anyway, I do want to read it because I know it'll be great. Mm-hmm. I just think it's really...
I think the essay about her three fathers is in that one.
Oh, okay.
And it's a really good essay.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll move
start
it up
with,
there.
You don't... A book of essays or short stories, you don't have to read them in order.
Oh, I know.
You know?
I know. You could just open one, yeah. read one, put it back on the shelf,
yep.
come back to it later. That's the beauty of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I do like Stephen King, and his son Joe Hill has a collection of four short stories called Strange Weather mm-hmm. that I want to read. And then there is a book called Good Women by Hallie Hill, not
related to Joe Hill. Joe Hill, that's not his last name. That's a pseudonym.
Pseudonym.
Good Women by Hallie Hill. I really want to read that. And I'm going to for a book club that I'm in. So those are the three that are on my radar. So, and a couple of yours I wrote down.
And you don't have to read the whole thing.
That's
right. You can just read the stories I started.
Yeah.
So, well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
And we managed to almost talk for an hour
on
this short topic.
short stories. You know, I just didn't used to like short stories. Mm-hmm. And now I just love them. And so you just never know how reading taste will
change.
As
you evolve and, you know, you are gravitated towards different things.
Yeah. So we will catch you guys next time. And Tracy and I will be talking about something different.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Stacks and Stories, the podcast of the Mississippi Library Commission. We hope you will tune in next time, and we encourage you to visit your local public library often.